On this episode of The Flatus Show, number 70B, arranged marriages, sex and pennies, bell curves, and Helen Keller. This and more.
The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose.
Welcome to the Flatus Show. Tab for my diet. Kitties, I have tab. And I'm Kenty. Jose is taking in that. Actually, he's awake right now. He's sort of staring off in the space. It's a Monday, which is unusual. This is the second half of my conversation with Joe G from Beppe Podcast. You can reach me at kenty@theflatusshow.com. You can also reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com, and you can reach me by phone at 206-339-JOSE, and that is a phone number courtesy of K7.net. You too can get your own phone number from K7.net for free, and you know, you can give this out and people can call you, and those voice messages will come to your inbox and your email, and that's it. It's just a toll call, possibly. And that's it. Nothing funny going on. So K7.net, thank you for that phone number. So this is the second half of my conversation with Joe G. And let's see here. Today I was home. I'm never home on Mondays. I took a day off. And I turned on the television, which I never do. And what is on is The View. I've seen it once before. The View, and that was when Barbara Walters was on it. I think she's still on it, I guess. Pardon me. yeah. Barbara Walters was on it, and they all started singing about drinking or drinking something with Campbell's soup, and it was like such a gross example of product placement. Today, it was just as bad. I mean, I watched it. I couldn't believe I was watching it, but I never saw it before. Actually, I saw it once, but people talk about it. Other podcasters, I won't mention them, talk about The View like it's the best thing since sliced bread. First off, you have, like, 2 minutes of show, if you can even call it a show. It's more like a big infomercial. And then tons of commercials. I was like, what's up with these people? They weren't very interesting, the people. They were, you know, I don't know why people watch it, why people even like it. So that's my take on The View. It's terrible. Last night I was watching football. Can you believe it? It was on TV. I just was flipping through the television. I was watching it. I was entranced. I was watching the game with I think it was the New York Jets with the against the Patriots, New England Patriots. And I was fascinated with the way that they move the ball back and forth and get along the field. It's like they go 10 yards and then they go back 20 yards and they're moving it around and slipping in the mud. So I thought it was interesting. I wouldn't mind watching football. Actually, I wouldn't mind watching it, but I hate the commercials. And just those commercials are was an interesting thing about the commercials. The thing that appeals to Republicans. there's this thing, one commercial, where it's a car, some sort of vehicle. I just saw, like, fog or something. And out the window. I was like, what is that? Is it smoke? But it's gone now. So, yeah, where am I? There's a some vehicle, some gas guzzling. Some scientist is looking through a telescope, and you see he sees that there's a meteor going to come crashing to the Earth in 17 hours. So he goes online. You think he's going to save the Earth, but he goes and he orders a car at one of these gas guzzlers, and he leaves the telescope right wherever it is, the observatory, in this electric car. Clunky electric cars, like this, you know, just to say that even tree huggers will want to get one if there's like no time left. So I think it just sort of fits in with this whole, you know, idea of doomsday that people have in their minds. It's not a foregone conclusion, you know. People have to just start waking up. So, yeah, football. That was fun, except for the commercials. In This Life is a song. I would get a recommendation to do this, perform this song, In This Life. And just to let you know, I'm working on it still. I'm not dissing you. I like the song. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to perform it on my ukulele. Oh, yeah, after The View, I saw some Jerry Springer, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was like, you ever see AI, the movie AI, where they put the robots, like, fight each other till their death? Like, these guys come out with chainsaws, and there's this crowd around the robots, and they're, you know, dismantling the robots. Well, Jerry Springer's like that. I'm thinking to myself, when I was a kid, I used to watch Phil Donahue. I'm like, this is not Phil Donahue. They thought Phil Donahue was racy. I mean, Phil Donahue should have gotten Pulitzer Prize or whatever they give for journalism. Jerry Springer, they had maniacs or something. And this guy, they have this guy on stage, and he's going after the audience. They have these guys on the edge of the stage trying to keep the maniac away from the audience. I mean, it was like, and then Jerry Springer's standing there smiling. I mean, come on, wake up. I mean, I don't know how many of my listeners watch these shows. Probably very few. But if you do, stop watching it. Give it away. Turn it off. I mean, you know, people say pop culture this, pop culture can suck my anus. That's what pop culture can do. You know? You need to develop your own fucking culture. So today I'm home. Johnny is at a conference in Maine. I think I mentioned that. And he recommends the Portland, Maine Museum. Museum of Portland, Maine. Has a great collection of American art. Jose! What are you doing? I'll take him out in a minute. So he's at home tonight. I'm going to make myself a nice steak with some mashed potatoes and some broccoli. And for dessert, I'm going to have trifle. But instead of using raspberry jam, I'm going to use, what the hell am I going to use? Cherry jam. So it'll be so delicious. I made some syllabub for it, which is really interesting. The original recipe, you use double cream, which is cream, heavy cream that's 48% butterfat, and the heavy cream in America is not that rich. So there's ways of getting around it. So I just use the heavy cream, and you beat it with sugar and some nutmeg, but then you add some wine, white wine, and lemon juice to that. And now it's in the refrigerator getting cooled. So it's like a fluffy dessert. And then I made custard for the trifle and stuff. So it'll be delicious, I'm sure. Can't wait to eat it. So I'm going to make my steak. I'm just thinking about how I'm going to prepare it. Have a little sauce on the side. Have mashed potatoes. I love mashed potatoes. So I'll be having mashed potatoes today. And let's see here. Here is the podcast. What is it? LifeSpring podcast promo, which he asked me to play, and I agreed to do that. So here's the LifeSpring podcast promo.
Curious about the God question? Looking for answers? Wonder what's up with those Christians?
Hi, I'm Steve Webb, host of the LifeSpring family of podcasts, inviting you to check out LifespringPodcast.com. We've got a family of 8 different shows over there, and you're bound to find something you'll really like. If you're curious about the whole God question and you're looking for answers, the original LifeSpring is where you'll want to start. LifeSpring was the very first Christian podcast not based on church sermons. You'll find great music, conversation, and reasons to believe as we hit you right between the ears with the message of hope, love, and good news. And that's just a start. The other shows are In Touch with God's Character, the LifeSpring Weekend Music Show, LifeSpring Hymn Stories, A Wing and a Prayer, LifeSpring's Your Wedding Your Way, and FastTwitch.tv, a video podcast. As you can see, the LifeSpring family of podcasts has lots to offer. Come on by LifeSpringPodcast.com and check out the shows. I'm Steve Webb, and I'll see you there.
Well, okay, there you go. We're going to... Actually, you know what else? I'm going to play something the other day I heard on the internet. It's this pastor, and he's talking about homosexuality. Now, this is actually why he... This is one of these fundamentalist Christians, and you're talking about where the Pope is, where the Pope is after he died. And of course he's in hell because, you know, he's Catholic. I'm not saying he really is in hell. I'm just saying that's probably what he is going to... I didn't finish listening to the whole thing, but I'm sure that's what he's going to say. He agreed with the Pope on many things. One of which was the end of communism in Poland. And also the Pope's a hard line against homosexuality and gay marriage, you know. So I just want to play this little section so you can hear what that pastor has to say about homosexuals. I think it's very kind and Christian. So that's this section right here. I'm going to play it right now.
And claiming the next generation. May I say to you, and I must hurry, I'm running out of time, and some of you are lifting your eyebrows up. I agree with him when it comes to condemning same-sex marriage. I appreciate the Pope, though he was not a married man himself, and that may be why he lived so long and died happy, but one thing, go ahead and say, man, you hypocrite, you believe it too. One thing I do appreciate about him, that even though it was in his latter years and the Catholic Church was definitely in days of controversy and confusion, he was not ashamed to stand up and look at that crowd and say, it is not right for two men to be joined together in what we call holy matrimony. That is the most sickening, stupidest thing that I've ever heard in my life. Who would have dreamed 25 years ago that in the United States of America, some stupid, pug-nosed, pot-bellied pig, half-communist judge would tell two fags they could be united in holy matrimony? I'll tell you something, you bunch of fags. You can have a marriage certificate as long as a roll of toilet paper. You're still a fag and an abomination in the sight of God. It's always been wrong. It always shall be wrong. I told a fag not long ago, I said, you better be glad we're not all fags. You'd have never got here. Well, tell you something, honey. It was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve in the Garden of Eden. And I'm telling you, God help a nation, brother, that'll put their sanctity on two men or two women. I don't care what society says. I know what the Bible said. God said it's an abomination, and it'll reap nothing shy than the curse of God across this country. I agree with him 100%. I condemn same-sex marriage. It's wicked, it's ungodly, and it's anti-Bible. It's wrong. Bless God, a baboon knows to go for a female. You got less brains than a monkey. Woo! Ain't we having a time? He condemned same-sex marriage.
Wasn't that special? Didn't you just feel so holy when he said fag? A couple fags. I just thought that was really holy. He must have gotten that from the Bible because it just sounded so holy, holy, holy. So I'm going to continue with the show right now. Here we go.
I need no signs. I need no chart. The Weather Bureau in my heart is saying it's raining sunbeams. The world is young. It's spring again, and I can laugh and sing again, for I know it's raining sunbeams. Now that there's a rainbow-colored sky on display, each gray yesterday seems so far away. Those golden darts from paradise are pouring down to break the ice. So write off phone, make it known to everyone you love. It's raining sunny sunbeams from above.
Okay. Oh, fuck me. Sorry. This cord is not long enough for my headphones.
That's so you wind up crashing somewhere?
Yeah. Okay, so now we have the second half. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about GLBT issues and...
GLBT.
Or religion, whatever you said.
GLBT and religion.
Yeah.
Is that what you want to talk about?
I guess so. Whatever you said something, and I know you said GLBT.
And religion.
So, and religion, since we're talking about religion.
Yeah. So is this going to be like a second podcast for you?
This will be the second. Well, it might be all one podcast, but I just wouldn't have to split the file up. So I don't. So it's easier to work with.
Oh, okay.
It's easier to work with smaller file sizes.
You know,
because I record it at the highest level, and then I work it down to a smaller file, and I retain the beautiful sound.
Now, are you taping right now?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Woot, woot, woot. Yeah, I made a cut here because Joe G and I were talking about Sybil. The movie Sybil, which you can get on Netflix.com. Look it up. Woot, woot, woot. Yeah.
Good God.
So anyway.
Anyway.
Good God is right. Okay, so GLBT and...
GLBT.
And religion.
Okay. So...
You start.
I have to start?
What do you have to say? Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, I think a lot of gay people, I'll say this, fall away from religion.
Yes.
Even like, I would say like the traditional Christian or traditional religious places when they are gay, because even those places are anti-homosexual.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think right at this point now, they're more open-armed to say welcome back. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But at that time, you've lost all those years of community, of growing in a faith, whether it's, you know, whatever faith you belong to.
Right. You know? I think the interesting thing about religion and GLBT stuff is that the vast majority of religions have had some negative opinion about same-sex relationships or people changing gender. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's exceptions, of course, and I know that in Hinduism there have been some exceptions depending on which part of the India you're in.
Indians, I know a bunch of Indians, actually Hindus.
Right.
Who I work with.
Yes.
And it is that the Hindus know that their children are gay.
Right.
So what they'll do is the arranged marriage, they'll arrange a gay guy to marry a lesbian.
Really?
Yes. And there'll be like a 40-year-old man who's clearly gay, and they'll have to wait to find somebody
to
marry them. Yeah, it's very funny, she said.
Huh. That is
so
weird.
Marry off the lesbians and the gays, you know.
But there is a negative feeling about homosexuality in Hinduism.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. There is. And in Indian society.
And in
Indian society,
right. And I think that's true with Buddhism. I mean, it's not as vociferous as it is in the West. In the West, it's like, it's so horrifying, homosexuality traditionally, that, you know, these people must be killed or jailed or changed.
Yeah.
But it's still there. I mean.
Even in Buddhism,
Yeah, even in Buddhism, yeah.
But that's all sex, isn't it? Isn't all...
Yeah, all desire.
All pleasure and desire is bad?
I suppose. I'm not really good about it. No, I'm thinking about more of the idea of being married and that, you know, if you're not a monk, then you marry and you have, you know, it's very traditional in that way.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about American-style Buddhism, by the way. I'm talking about more traditional Buddhism in the East.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, either you are in the monastery or you have a family and you have a very extended family that you're a part of. And, you know, they, of course, marriage was not necessarily for the purpose of love per se. Mm. It was more for children and property and, you know, extended families and, you know, taking care of one's parents and then your children taking care of you when you're old and, you know, loyalty. It's more along those lines than romance or love. So
yeah, you know, it brings me to a thought. I believe, and it seems to me that marriage generally, and I'm talking about in Western history, the history of the West and the East,
right,
has been arranged basically.
Yeah,
and it really has nothing to do with emotions and love and romance, but more like what you said is for creating families and lines of power and wealth distribution,
right,
and raising children.
Right.
Especially in the West. I mean, I'm not really sure if they cared about if peasants ever married, you know?
Uh-huh.
Do we really know that peasants had families? You know, peasants had, you know, children.
Yeah.
Right? But were they married? You know what I'm saying?
Maybe not in the official sense, but they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They cohabitated.
They cohabitated.
But I mean, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know. So with this, right, marriage, right, was arranged. Somebody in society, the mother, the father, whatever, said these two people will marry.
Right.
Or in the case of like royalty, I mean, it was the country or the parliaments that, you know, said, hey, maybe you ought to marry Philip because of Spain so we have better relations with them. Right,
right? Yeah.
Whereas a homosexual relationship, right,
right,
it is designed, it's a covenant between two people by those two people and for those two people.
Right.
And it's not for any other reason. You know?
Yeah. Well, I wonder if the whole issue of heterosexuality and homosexuality, those ideas, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but,
yep,
you know, when marriage is, when you think about marriage as being totally a transaction where people don't marry for love, but they marry for family ties and tradition and loyalty and property, et cetera, and for child bearing and rearing, et cetera, then the idea of a sexuality is not so important anymore. Do you see what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
you, this is just a contract. It's a relationship, and yes, sometimes these partners do come to love each other over time.
But it's not necessary.
But it's
really
not necessary. Love is not, and even sexual attraction is not necessarily important.
Yeah.
It's just that you're having children. So, you know, some of the guys in particular, I probably had women on the side. And then there were, and there were always a few men and maybe a few women who had people of their own sex on the side for, you know what I mean, for sexual
like
pleasure.
Like Edward II.
right, for sexual pleasure. You know.
Yeah. Well, look at Henry VIII. He always had a bun in the oven. Well, he actually didn't have a buns in the oven. He had a, you know, he had a wife on the side.
Right.
He always had somebody there before he killed the wife current wife. You know.
He always did that, and I think it was during the medieval period in of course the medieval period, it's only in Western Europe, where the idea of romantic love arose, where, you know, these troubadours would sing songs to these women who they thought were beautiful and were like goddesses and stuff like that, and there was this kind of infatuation, and so romantic love became a concept within the aristocracy and amongst the landed and the gentry or whatever. At least this is my limited, you know, I'm just talking off the top of my head here.
Well, it certainly was. It had nothing to do with the peasants.
It had nothing to do with the peasants or the laborers. No,
yeah,
absolutely not. And then again, you know, if you think about it too, I was reading about this somewhere, you know, people's marriages didn't last as long. So, I mean, you know, when the average age was 40 and you died, it was possible to have several partners, you know, and then also you would have partners on the side, you know, you'd frolic with the maid, you know, up in the haystack, you know, so
what, do the simple folk do.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. When many pregnancies ended in death for the fetus or the child died by the age
and
of
the woman
one,
too.
And the woman died, you didn't have to worry about necessarily children that were, who were bastards, quite frankly, because a lot of these kids died, frankly.
Yeah. Well, and the bastards were never recognized.
They were never recognized. Either. Exactly. Yeah. So there were lots of different ways of getting around this because of different circumstances. But as marriage became more an issue of love and then people lived longer, then this idea of heterosexuality started to come to the fore, because then you have these people who actually didn't feel that way. They didn't feel romantic or sexual desire, although they might have been able to fully function in a more traditional marriage, arranged marriage. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. It's absolutely true. I'm just thinking about it. Do you think the idea of romantic love is just a pipe dream? I mean, the fact that people fall in love and get googly-eyed, this all happens to people in their 20s,
Right.
Do you think really that's a good basis for a relationship? What do you think?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's been a critique of Western ideas about love by traditional cultures, that romance is not necessarily a good reason for – it's not a good basis for a marriage or a long-term relationship. Yeah.
Maybe marriage is just to have children, It's not such a bad way of defining and that's not to say that what I'm saying is that's not to say this gay marriage is bad, because I really think gay marriage should be recognized, so people can take advantage of inheritance and rights and everything, because I think it is an important covenant, if you want to use a biblical term, between two people.
Yeah.
Saying we're going to stay together. We're committed.
Right.
You know?
But I think there are a lot of couples, regardless of the gender of the people involved, that have a covenant and have a love relationship where it's more companionship than a romantic, the idea, let me put it this way, the idea where people fall in love and then are always in love for the rest of their lives, and they've always loved each other for the rest of their lives, that's the exception to the rule.
I don't think it ever exists. Yeah. Love each other forever.
No, I mean, there are couples, I think, that honestly believe they feel as strongly about each other as they did before. But those are the exception to the rule.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Most people don't feel that way, whether they're heterosexual or homosexual or whatever their sexuality is. But I do think there are couples that grow to respect each other, and maybe they mimic what happens in some traditional marriages, where people grow to love each other and they become companions for each other. And so they're used to each other. They're used to each other's farting. They're used to each other's
quirks
they even understand that these people have dark sides to them and that they're bastards. Yeah. But you know what? They understand that they're bastards themselves at times, and so, you grow over time to respect and care for each other, but it's more like a companionship friendship than maybe a romantic relationship.
I agree.
With
what you just said.
But now you've been in, how long have you been with your partner?
For 10 years.
For 10 years, right.
Yeah.
So.
And it's absolutely true. What you were saying, as I was thinking about something I read, there was a, these people who are married for, 80 years or something like that. They're in their hundreds or whatever.
Right.
They've been married for a long time, the longest married couple. And the guy said, well, we might have a fight at breakfast, but we just get over it.
Right.
We realize it. It's like we accept our downsides. They're really our companions. I mean, maybe they do have a romantic relationship. Who's to say?
Yeah.
But I thought that was really funny,
Yeah.
You just accept it. Don't get so bent out of shape.
Right.
Right. You just say, okay, by bedtime, we're done fighting. That's what it is. By the time you go to bed, none of that matters.
Yeah.
And we go to bed peacefully.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, put away your pencils and your paper, close up your desk, lock it, and then, you know what, that's it. You know, no more fighting, no more working. You're, you know, resting, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, how...
So I think I agree with what you said.
Now, I mean, I don't know if you want to get personal or not, but with you, I mean, with mm-hmm. your partner, was there a romantic interest with each other when you first met each other?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a romantic interest when we first... romantic with a capital R.
Okay, and then...
I mean, I think it's what they say is that the first year of marriage, you put a penny in every time you have sex, right? You put a penny in a bowl every time you have sex.
Okay.
And then after the first year, you take out a penny every time you have sex, and you'll never empty that bowl. And that is true in my case. So.
Okay, then.
So I don't understand people who are rabbits, you know, having sex all the time throughout their entire relationship. You know, of course it's important, but, you know, companionship is very important.
Right,
you know,
right.
You develop, you know, you get ingrained in each other. It's like growing into each other.
Right.
You know, we have so much that, you know, that it's hard to separate. You know, it's not easily separate. We can't really easily separate our lives out.
Yeah.
You know, we're entangled.
Yeah.
Tangled up in blue is Bob Dylan.
Well, see, now I think what you should do as far as with your sex life is you need to get a whip and just, you know, change it up a little bit.
Dr. Pepe. I'm not unhappy with my sex life. That's it.
Well, that's fine. but if you want more of it, you might have, you know, no, I'm just teasing you.
Demand it.
Yeah, that's right.
I know you are.
You know. Put some, you know, leather pants on and
get a taser.
Yeah, get a taser. I like that.
Yeah.
That's funny. But anyway, what does this have to do with religion?
I don't know. We're talking about marriage. We're talking about this has everything to do with religion, because the religious right is trying to say that gays can't marry.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, gays should be able to marry because they can make a covenant with each other. In fact, David and Jonathan made a covenant with each other.
They did.
Now, they'll say that it wasn't sexual, but who cares if it's sexual, right? Let's say you have two people who want to make a covenant with each other, and it's not a sexual relationship.
Right.
But they want to build a life together, you know, protect each other and love each other. Can't they do that? Aren't they allowed to do that? And pass on the right of inheritance to each other?
Right.
You know, same-sex marriage has nothing to do with the actual sexual activity. And I think, you know, let's talk about sex for a second. I think that evangelicals, when they think homosexual, they think anal sex.
They do.
And not all homosexuals are into anal sex, you know?
We're not?
Well, I'm not.
I wanted to. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you can go. I'm just saying. So don't you think that? That's what they think?
When they think
homosexual, they immediately focus on your ass.
Yeah, they think about anal sex. They absolutely do.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And that's wrong. It's really bad. It's wrong of them that they jump to conclusions.
Yeah. And I think that's because heterosexuals or people who, you know, are very closeted homosexuals who don't know about homosexual. You know, I mean, if you think about it, lesbians don't necessarily have penetration.
That's right.
When they have sex. Some of them do, though. Some of them do have penetration.
Yeah.
Both vaginal and anal. I've come to learn. So, and you know what?
I learned that, too.
Yes. And there are some heterosexuals that have anal sex. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's not the man who's penetrating the woman. It's the reverse. So,
yeah.
So, you know, anal sex is just one little part of the sexual armamentarium.
Yeah.
Part of the...
Well, I agree.
You know.
I agree with you. But I think what it is that when they think of it, it's... Okay, what I think there's too much of a focus on anal sex, first of all, in the homosexual community.
Listen.
Because it apes heterosexual sex.
Yeah.
And in what it does is you're not... I think it is a barrier to really two men loving each other.
Well, I think...
Because there's a top and a bottom. There's a power dynamic they're trying to have the same power dynamic as that of a man and a woman.
Right. Okay.
And what that does is it disregards the, you know, maleness of the relationship. The two males, you know, love each other, not a man and a woman. Yes. You think I'm full of shit? John says I'm full of shit.
Okay, well, we're not going to go there. Okay. Does he want to get on and talk about this?
No, he's just going to make comments from outside the other room. Okay, so anyway, what do you think? I just spouted my my mouth off.
I think that heterosexuals make too much of vaginal sex.
Probably.
I think they do. They only think about sex as being vaginal intercourse. And they don't realize that they can do all sorts of other things with each other that are pleasurable and enjoyable. They have nothing to do with vaginal sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never...
At the same time,
yeah.
Right, if we're thinking about in religious terms that marriage is to make children, why? What other kind of sex is there? You know,
well,
in those terms, you know, I agree with you. Why can't women and men just sit there and kiss each other and jerk each other off? You know, right. Why do they have to penetrate?
But the other thing is that many Christians, and I think this is also true for Jews, and probably Buddhists, and many modern people, they don't think of marriage as being for propagation for children. In the same way? No, I don't think so. I think they think of having one or two kids, but the vast majority of the time that they have sex, it's not to procreate.
You're probably right about that.
And that includes evangelicals, by the way. A lot of them have sex without the intention of pregnancy.
Yeah. Yeah, but do they take birth control?
Sure, of course they do.
Evangelicals use birth control?
Of course they do.
But isn't that against their belief?
No.
Is that killing a fetus?
No, that's you're thinking of Roman Catholics.
Oh, I mix them up all the time.
Yeah, now, evangelicals use birth control. I wish they would use more of it, frankly speaking.
spermicidal foam, just to be sure.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Just, you know, to cover your bases.
Absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, so a lot of the sex that occurs, at least in the West and in more industrialized countries between men and women, is not for pregnancy. It's for sex. It's for fun. You know, it's for pleasure. Yeah. So, but I think
you said something earlier. You said, you know, the time of the kings and everything, you know, they had their wives, which were to have the heirs and the babies.
Right.
But they had the people on the side.
Right.
And I think that's probably what it is now. We're just people having people, you know, we're choosing the people on the side instead of worrying about a structure where there's a marriage and then there's sex on the side. It's just always sex on the side.
It's always sex on the side with the same person, though.
With the same person.
Right. So the person, right.
Exactly. Monogamous sex on the side.
Right. It's
with
just
coleslaw.
It's for fun. It's for fun.
It's for fun.
It's for recreation.
Yeah.
It's not just to...
Which seems kind of odd to me in a way, but anyway.
Why is it odd?
I don't know why. Let me think about it.
You think heterosexuals having sex recreationally is odd?
No, I don't.
Oh.
I really don't.
Okay.
No, I mean I don't know what I'm saying.
I'll
do a voot, voot, voot to clarify my views.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if you – have you heard as a little voot, voot on the side here, you heard some recent Beppe podcasts?
I have.
Okay. Now,
I've listened to all of them.
Have you
kidding me?
Have you heard the voot – have you heard the one where I've added your burp to the voot, voot, voot?
Yes. Was that my burp?
That's your burp. That's not me. That's you. You burped a number of times. It was like two or three podcasts ago. You were drinking your tab and you kept burping. And they got better as they got along. And I chose the one that I thought was the best. And I just added them together. Vit, 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 blah. You know, the belch. It's perfect.
Well, that's funny.
It's perfect.
It is. For flatus, too, you know, because it's an ejection of air.
Right.
I did hear that. I didn't know it was my burp, though.
It's your burp.
I didn't recognize it. Here comes John.
He's coming to get Jose.
Okay, he's taking Jose for a nap. Actually, Jose's already napping, right?
He's just going to venue.
He's just going to change venues. Good for him. Nap with John. See, John and him have more sex than I do.
Oh.
I'm just joking. Johnny's not into bestiality.
Well, anyway.
Johnny's nap isn't disturbed.
So, yeah, but I mean, I think that getting back to the idea about heterosexuals thinking about homosexual sex being anal, it's because they think of sex as penetration. That's what they think. And so when penetration is not involved, they think, well, how can that be sex? And you think, and I think to myself, well, gee, you obviously have, you need to expand your venue.
Yeah.
Your
turn
repertoire.
The page. They're still on the first page of The Joy of Sex.
Yeah, they're just thinking about, oh, I've got to, you know, boink her, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I must boink her.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay. Now, did you have sex education when you were in high school?
I did.
In your public school?
I had sex education starting in sixth grade.
Really? Starting in sixth grade?
Yes.
What did you learn in sixth grade? About what?
Body parts.
Well, I guess I learned about body parts in sixth grade.
But they separate.
So remember the. Go on.
There were boys, and only the boys would be together, and then all the girls would be together. And they would talk about the differences in boys and girls.
Yeah, I think they separated us out. I remember when I was in sixth grade, and the girls were shuffled out of the class to have a special meeting.
Right.
They were learning about menstruation, I think.
Exactly.
And I was, like, so jealous because girls could menstruate. Boys didn't have that rite of passage.
Oh, my God. Really? You thought...
Yeah. I was like, why do they get to menstruate? Why don't... I really thought that the first ejaculate was, like, my menstruation.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't wait to ejaculate because I was thinking that was a sign of growing, you know?
Now, you know you can do that on your own, right? You don't have to wait.
I did. I did. I found out. I mean, I actually, you know, worked at it to get the...
Very good to hear.
I read about it. So it's just eventually it happens, you know, because, you know, you get it right. Sort of like you have to just... It's a trial and error.
Well, that's a rite of passage.
It is. It is. Sort of. But I'm just telling you what I thought.
Right.
You know?
Uh-huh.
I thought, girls, they menstruate. Boys don't.
But we have...
What makes... How will I know I'm a man, you know?
Right. I mean, when I was a kid, we started getting more formal sex education in high school.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, me too. I had formal... But did you learn about homosexuality in sex ed?
Minimally.
Okay, what did you learn? Because I'll tell you what I learned.
We learned... This was in high school. It was not in junior high or grammar school. But in high school, we learned that there were people that were gay. They did use that word, gay. Mm-hmm. That preferred... romantic partners of the same sex.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. When they were talking about homosexuality, they said this. They gave us the guy, I think the coach was gay, or bisexual at least. He was talking about sexuality. He goes, it's on a scale. Kinsey, this is tried and true fact. I mean, this is what Kinsey found. I mean, I don't know what that... I trust Kinsey's results.
Uh-huh.
That there's, you know, a scale. There's heterosexuals at one end and homosexuality at the other end. And most of us are in the middle. They're really bisexuality. And his claim was that bisexuality is really what most people are.
Huh.
Is that there are degrees of sexuality. He told himself, he goes, well, you know, you can, you know, you be in the bath, you're in the shower, right? And you see a good-looking guy, you know? You recognize that in a physical way, and I know men do that. All sorts of men, straight or, you know, this idea of straight and gay is false.
Okay,
I think we're all in that continuum, just that some of us sort of focus on one or the other.
Right.
But I think, you know, I think there are. I think gay people who identify as gay are probably closer to the gay scale, but there's a whole bunch of other people who are almost gay,
right?
Which are consider themselves straight because that's the way society says. But I think most men, you know, get a hard on when they think about, or can when they think about particular other guys.
Okay,
what do you think?
I don't know. I mean,
so that's what I think.
My experience has been pretty much very homosexual. My orientation.
Mine too.
So it's hard for me to know if there are. I do believe there are gradations. I think that Kinsey was right that there are differences and there are variations. But I suspect that the vast majority of people are, although they may have some capacity to understand homosexual romance or love or even sex, they're pretty much heterosexual. That's my impression of people. Now, there are people who are bisexual who would strongly disagree with what I just said, but I know a lot of women who identify themselves as heterosexual, for example, not a lot, but several women who mm-hmm. have said that they have experimented having relationships with another woman or have mm-hmm. even fallen in love with another woman without necessarily having any sexual relations with her. So, but they still...
You don't think a lot of guys do that? A lot of straight guys don't do that, you know?
I think it happens more than men admit to, but I don't know if it happens as much as gay men would fantasize it would happen. You know,
hey.
I'm sorry.
It's not a fantasy.
I'm not talking
it's
about
reality,
you.
Baby.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the fact that there's this, you know, there's the fantasy about the straight man who if he just got a blowjob from another man, he would know what it was really all about and blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
Well, that's, I understand. But the thing is, like 60%, it's supposed to be 60% are on that close to gay scale. That's like the amount. It's like the 20% homosexual, 20% straight. Is that right? Yeah. 60% are in that middle.
Are in the middle.
I think that, I really think that there's a greater degree of men who fall in love with other men. But I don't think it goes necessarily all the way to sexuality.
Right. Okay.
I think it can.
Okay. Now, where did you get this? Where did you get that percentage? Was that from your coach?
No. Oh. No. It was. I read this later, and it was in a Kinsey report or something. But if you look at the scale, right? There's 100%, 10%, 10%, 10%, 10%. Okay.
Okay.
You have 10%, right? That makes 100%
okay.
of people.
Okay.
100% of people. And you have a scale. So the 20% nearest the straight, they're going to be pretty straight, right?
Right.
And the 20% near the gay, they're going to be pretty gay.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So if you get to the middle, that means they're half and half. So that gets like 60% right there in the middle.
Yeah, but
that, 30 on either side of the middle.
But what you're assuming there is you're assuming the bell curve, the normal bell curve shape, and not all phenomenon is a normal curve. That way,
that's true.
I haven't seen information from the Kinsey Institute in a while, but my understanding that it's more like a reverse J curve, which means that there's a very high steep. Is zero heterosexual? Is that on the Kinsey?
I don't know which side. It doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah, but let's say zero is heterosexual.
Okay.
So
yeah.
On the left hand side of the curve, you're going to have a very steep. Very high percentage of people, and then it starts to rapidly curve downward, until you get like a so it's a left what they call left skew.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I think the percentages are. In fact, there's a steeper curve for heterosexual for men than there are for women, which means that there are more men who identify as heterosexual and. State that their behavior is heterosexual than women do. Now, of course, some of that is self-report, and so you would assume that there's probably a bias there against homosexual or bisexual behavior. But but even so, it's still very heavily skewed towards heterosexual. That's my understanding.
Of course, that's only what people say, right?
Right.
So really knows? Who really knows?
That's true, but that was true with the Kinsey report as well.
Yeah.
They were,
okay, well, I'll look into that.
Yeah.
I'll have to find out where I got that.
Let me put it this way. I agree that there are a lot of men who deny having homosexual feelings or even having had experiences with other men, and they identify as heterosexual. That I completely agree. As to whether they're really bisexual or gay is another issue. I don't know. Maybe they are bisexual. I don't know.
So what do you think about bisexuality? Do you think it exists, or do you think it's just gay guys who don't want to say they're gay?
I think both. I think it.
What do you mean?
I think it really exists, and some of them are primarily gay men who are saying that because they don't want to acknowledge that they're gay. But I think a lot of people are bisexual. Yeah. In fact, I bet you there's more bisexuals than there are gays.
So how many bisexuals? What percentage? They say 10% of the population is gay, right?
Well,
what would you say? What percentage of the population would you say is bisexual?
Well, more accurately, there's about 5 to 7% of the population who are exclusively homosexual. That's more accurate.
Oh, really?
Not 10%. No.
Oh, come on.
It's not
10%. One in ten.
In fact, in fact, if you look at a lot of the literature that comes out of the gay, like civil rights organizations, you don't see them saying 10% anymore.
Okay, so it's 5 to 7%.
It's 5 to 7%. Yeah, they've that's
which is not as sexy.
It's not as sexy as 10. And this is my guess. I would guess probably 10 to 15% are bisexual.
And so that's on top of the 7%.
Top of the 7%. So let's go with a high 7% exclusively homosexual or primarily homosexual,
and 15% bisexual.
Right. And then the rest are pretty much exclusively heterosexual.
So you're saying 21% of the population is experimental?
No, has some capacity for homosexual behavior. Or
if you're bisexual, right, you have capacity for both. Correct. Okay, so just saying. So what about transsexuals? What percentage of the population is transsexual?
My guess is it's under 1%.
Under 1%.
That's my guess. Hmm. Now, but I don't know. You'd have to talk with transsexuals about that.
Yeah.
I really don't know that.
I'll have to ask Rebecca.
Rebecca would know. Yeah, she would know.
Rebecca would know. She would know. Because there might be less than 1%, but they're awfully noisy.
Well, they're making their presence known.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, they're definitely making their presence known. But I would like to talk to people in the transsexual community because I think there's a difference between transsexuality and transgenderism.
How do you determine the difference?
I think this is my thinking. Transsexuals are people who want to go through medical procedures to live out their life, and transgendered people feel they don't need to do that to live their life as the other sex.
So it's like chicks with dicks are the transgender, and the other one, they want to have the operation.
I think, but you know, that's my, again, let me qualify that as a guess. That's a guess.
Okay. It's not. You're going to have a boycott out. You're going to have people with a bunch of transsexuals outside your apartment.
Listen,
with placards.
I don't.
Intolerant. Joji's intolerant.
And I'd say, let's go out for dinner and let's talk about it. Let's have a good dinner. I'm hungry.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
And I'm sure they would agree with me. So.
I'm sure, too.
Now, I don't know. I honestly don't know what the percentage of people who identify themselves as transsexual or transgendered. I don't know that.
You know, with – what was I going to say? I forget about that. Because I forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Oh, these things, they come into my mind and fly out like a little bird nesting on an empty nest. So, okay, so where can we go from
here? I don't know. Where were you going with all this? We were talking about marriage.
Know.
We were talking about, you were talking about that there are more men who are actually gay or bisexual than actually claim.
That's what I read, is that there's 60%. Is in the middle. But, you know, your bell curve sounds more accurate, your reverse J.
The reverse J as opposed to the bell. What you're describing is a bell curve.
Yeah,
what,
I'm describing the bell curve.
What I'm describing.
And you're saying it's a reverse J.
It's a reverse J curve, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably closer to right.
Yeah.
But is it just political?
Is it just political? Who knows?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. How can you really trust anything anymore, you know?
Well, I do think, however, that the interviewing that people do now around sexuality and sexual behavior is owes a lot to Kinsey, but is more sophisticated than what Kinsey did. I mean, what Kinsey and his crew did was highly, highly sophisticated for its time. It was the very idea of meeting with people face to face and having specific questions that were asked in a routinized way was highly, highly sophisticated for the 1940s. No one had ever done that before. And the fact that they learned that they did it in a way that he trained his interviewers to not be subjective, to be very accepting, to allow people to answer the questions exactly the way they wanted to answer them, to then learn how to ask follow-up questions to get more information. No one had done that before. And Not only had no one done that before, they had never done that about sexual activity or sexual feelings. That was completely new. So when people say, oh, it wasn't very sophisticated, there are problems with it. Well, yeah, duh. Of course there were problems with it. But for its time, it was highly sophisticated. No one had done that. But now they have better ways of interviewing people.
What do you think are some of the questions they had? Do you give blowjobs to other men?
Yeah, they actually...
Was it salty or sweet?
No.
That's to test them to see if they really did it.
No, they did ask very explicit questions like that.
Wow. So what do they do now? Like, you must know.
Yeah,
sociology. So yeah, but how would they go about it now? How would they ask you?
How
would they do a sex study?
They may not have... Some of the questions that Kinsey asked may have been more leading than they do now. They're less leading questions.
Like, give me an example of a leading question when it comes to sex and a non-leading question when it comes to sex.
Off the top of my head, I don't know if I could
do
that.
I trust you. You're a smart guy.
I don't know if I could do that off the top of my head. That's hard for me to come up.
You're Mr. Academic to me.
Well, I know, but I don't know if I can't do that off the top of my head at this point. But leading questions are...
Follow-up.
You know...
That's what will be a follow-up. You have to send me an email so I can add it.
Oh, God. Oh, for the love of God.
Okay, that might be too difficult.
Vut. Yeah.
I have to go now. I have to go have dinner with a bunch of trannies.
The trannies are here. I gotta go. Rebecca's here. I've got to go.
Yeah.
I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of a leading question. Or sometimes questions ask two things when you only want to ask one thing. There are different ways of asking questions that are cleaner and are more, that can lead to more accurate answers, let's say. But I'm not saying that he had a horrible time. The data is still incredible. And they still have the data, by the way. They still have the raw data. That's incredible that they still have that. So it's available.
So that is normally doesn't happen?
Normally.
Like the raw data usually does not exist?
Typically.
I mean, it doesn't survive after the report is made?
Typically it doesn't, no.
Really?
No. They put it into computer electronic forms, and then I think there's even laws now that you have to destroy any identifying information after so many years.
So they have identifying information?
Sometimes
on the
they do.
Report?
That I don't know. No, I don't. I'm just talking about research in general.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about the Kinsey report. But the thing with the Kinsey report that was also slightly problematic was how they sampled people. So that was some of the problem. They used a convenience sample, basically. They just went from one group and, do you know people we can interview? And then they would ask more people, and they would ask friends of friends, and then friends of friends of friends, and that biases the kinds of answers that you'll get because you're only getting a certain group of people from the population as to a wider spectrum. But even then, that's not a bad thing per se. A lot of social research still does that, by the way. You know, a lot of the research still does that. How do you think a lot of the research is done with gay men? It's through convenience samples.
Oh, yeah. How is she going to find them?
How is she going to find them? Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But nowadays they can ask, you know, they can do sexuality tests or surveys that can sample a wider swath of the population than what Kinsey did. But I still think what Kinsey did was astounding. Astounding. And he and his crew just did. Some of the most revolutionary stuff that they did was the fact that women acknowledged that they found sex pleasurable and that they had orgasms.
And they didn't know that before?
They knew it, but they thought that it was rare. And they thought, and many women thought that it was wrong for a woman to find sex to be pleasurable.
I can believe that.
But they found that, in fact, the majority of women found it pleasurable and lived with that without, you know, having a horrible life. Mm-hmm. You know, that they just did it very quietly. That's all.
Yeah.
It wasn't well known.
Nagumi.
No, I mean that they didn't acknowledge that they had orgasms or that they found sex very pleasurable.
They didn't start yelling until the 70s.
Right. The 70s.
Then they could say, help, give it to me.
Right, exactly.
Eat me.
Exactly.
If it's good enough for Gertrude Stein, it's good enough for me.
The only way that women could have orgasms was through opera. You know, that with a, you know, that's the only way they could have an orgasm is if they were an opera star. So.
I'm just practicing my high C.
That's right. So, you know, that's my understanding of things. So
I'm waiting for, you know, a sex survey for people to ask questions about sexuality without mentioning sexuality.
Yeah.
Questions like, do you listen to Barbra Streisand or Metallica? Either one will put you on the gay side.
Right, exactly. Right. Right. Oh, no, there's some gay men who like Metallica.
That's right. I know.
Yeah.
Or is the other one, Judas Priest.
Judas Priest. That's it. Judas Priest. Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Gay.
Right. Yeah. Well, there are some of those surveys already online.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they're not legitimate.
Is it like that gay Godzilla thing or whatever is it? What is
Godzilla?
No.
Like Gaydar. There's like a Gaydar.
No, there's these things where I forget who does it. Zilla something. It's not Zilla Fag.
Uh-huh.
And what you do is it's online and you answer questions, like silly questions like that. And they tell you who you are.
Right, yes, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
What kind of gay are you?
Yeah, what kind of gay are you? What book are you?
Are you a Carson?
Right.
The Carson Five. Are you a Carson Five?
Right, exactly. What opera are you? Yes.
Yeah, what opera are you?
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. This wouldn't have happened 20 years ago.
No, it wouldn't have, but now it does.
I know.
Of course, this podcast wouldn't have happened 20 years ago either.
Yeah, but you know, a friend of mine, right, when I was in high school, we used to make tapes like radio programs. I think it was podcasting before podcasting, and we had these tapes, and we did little shows and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
We did meet skits and everything, and we taped them. We gave them to our friends and stuff. It was very, you know, it was like, I could tell you the subscriber base. It was like less than 10.
It was less than 10, yeah, a handful.
Yeah, and the distribution took a lot longer. We had to make tapes and stuff, but yeah.
Wow.
I think,
so you're
I think
ahead
people
of, do you still
podcasted.
Have them?
They're lost. They're lost. My friend had them. I really want them because I'd like to listen to them again.
You could put them on your podcast.
I'd love to. We did this thing. It was in high school. It was our senior year. And there's this religious person. There's a woman. There was a lot of fundamentalists in our area, too. It's like a lot of Jewish people and a big fundamentalist churches and Catholics. But anyway, this fundamentalist teacher, she got in trouble for writing Bible verses on the board.
Oh, my God.
In their class. She was a math teacher. But you know, she was very unobtrusive.
Okay.
She didn't force anybody. But she wrote them, you know, and it was nothing like John 3:16. It was more like a nice thought, you know, like things to live by sort of passages.
I see. Okay.
But she got in trouble. So she said, well, can I have there are students of mine who are Christians. And we'd like to have a prayer thing in the morning in lieu of homeroom. So it was allowed. They said, okay, sure. You know, whoever wants to go to prayer club can. So she ran it, and this other woman who was this older woman. And so me and my friend were like, hey, let's get out of homeroom. Let's go to this thing. So I remember we were talking about – he was Catholic, by the way.
Okay.
And I was Lutheran. You know, I was going to the Lutheran church.
Okay.
So they were talking about something about Muslims going to hell, the one teacher, the older one. She was like really hellfire. She's like, Muslims, all Muslims will go to hell. So me and Sean are like, I don't think all Muslims are going to go to hell. So we went into the Bible. We went home and we found all these passages.
Yeah.
I'll get to my point how this becomes a podcast in a minute.
Okay.
And so we went in there, and it was our last time we went in there, and we gave her all the passage, and she's like, you're the demon, the demons. So we're like, whatever, Sharita, we're out of here.
Wow.
So we're like, that's like a damn cult, right? So we did this thing. So we found these Bible verses, random Bible verses, and we did this thing about becoming a Christian and how it was like a cult. And I was in the background, like, would you like a flower? Like, I was being hypnotized. It's like, like the Moonies. I'm like, Philippians 3, verse 2. So that's my famous, like, phrase. I can quote Philippians 3, verse 2, because it's the only thing I can quote, which is, beware of dogs, beware of evil workers, and beware of the concision. But
wow,
the only Bible
that.
Verse I can quote. Yeah,
I think you should have that on your site.
I should. You know? I should that. Philippians 3, verse 2.
And in fact, it should be on your contact. You know, it should say, hi, this is the Flatus Show. Oh, you just changed it.
What?
The Flatus Show. Did you? You changed your contact. The Flatus Show's podcast is a weekly variety show in the style of a vaudeville act.
Oh, yeah. I've recently changed that. Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
It's true. I've been talking about that.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a weekly variety show in the style of a vaudeville act. I think that's more accurate.
I think
so, too.
I'm
trying to, like, making it more specific and more what I feel it, what I want it to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, by the way, no one has submitted the 10-minute act. So I'll have to announce it this week.
I'm doing my own podcast.
I know. You don't have to. I'm really want other. I want people who
don't podcast
to do it. You know. But though I did get Darren from Florida sent me a song a couple weeks ago, which was so sweet.
Yeah.
And it just brought a tear to my eye. It was really sweet.
Yeah, it was
sweet. So nice. So Darren, thank you.
That's right. Thank you, Darren.
And I don't want to make you feel guilty. You know, you don't have to do the 10 minutes. Okay.
Just do another song.
Yeah. I mean, I have, another thing I realize, I've never broken the 50 mark of my subscriber list.
Right, yeah. Neither have I.
It goes up to 40. I think the highest I've been is 46.
Wow.
And then it goes down to like 37.
Yeah.
And then, or lower, 20 sometimes. But yeah. it's been around 38, 36 to 38. But over a year, I mean, I have done everything possible to try to do that. And so I realized that I really don't care how many listeners I have.
Yeah.
The listeners I have are the listeners I have.
Right.
And they enjoy it, and I enjoy what I'm doing. So
that's right.
Fuck the rest of the population.
That's right. Let them all rot in hell.
Yeah, let them all rot in hell. You're all demon worshippers.
That's right. You dogs.
You're not born again.
That's right. Praise the Lord.
Yeah, unless you listen to the Flatus Show, you're not born again. And that's in one of the Gnostic Gospels, I can tell you.
It's in the Gospel of Judas.
Yeah.
It's the Gospel of Judas Flatus.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So,
have we covered everything that you'd like to cover?
I think so. Do you want to wrap it up? Do you want to have anything to say about
No, I don't have anything else to say. I'm fine.
Okay.
That's all.
In the words of Helen Keller.
Sorry, I'm channeling her right now.
Yeah, it's the sounds of Helen Keller. Well, you know, Helen Keller, right? She was a... What the hell was she? She was a Swedenborgian. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yep, she was Swedenborgian. And my grandmother used to take us to a Swedenborgian chapel in Pennsylvania, which is really beautiful.
Yeah.
And they were kind of weird. But that's enough of religion.
That's enough for religion.
Yeah, but look it up. Swedenborgians are interesting.
Okay, I will.
They have demons and angels. So I'm going to turn it off, and then we can continue talking about the Q-Potters, Sybil in particular.
Sybil.
So I'm going to turn it off.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE, or you can reach me at Kenty@theflatusshow.com. Thank you. for listening.